Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is Brian McCall, Chancellor of the Texas State University System. If I could make just one weekly podcast required listening on our campuses, I'm not sure it would be this one. Nevertheless, here's your Tribcast crew.
Thank you, Chancellor. I'm reporter Reeve Hamilton here with Managing Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Reporter Tan Tan.
Hello.
And Ben Philpott of KUT in the Texas Tribune.
I think we need to get people who don't insult us every time.
That is the only reason they're willing to do it.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
It makes it easier to get them. Can I insult you? Yes, okay.
Well, they don't want to insult anyone else. That's risky.
Well, there you go.
This is the political world, after all.
Right.
We're the safest targets in Austin. We are here on the second to last week of June, and we will be talking about vetoing, groping, and leaving, and whether or not the lawmakers will get to do that anytime soon. Let's start with vetoing. The governor issued his vetoes for the regular session last Friday. Did any of those jump out to anyone? Well, I didn't read them, so I don't know.
Texting while driving is the one that caught everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always something in there where that may or may not be a good veto, but it's always a surprise. You know, he didn't indicate one way or the other that I know of when this bill was in the legislature that he had any kind of problem with it. It kind of sailed through. It's been an idea for a while. There have been a couple of sort of notable crashes and things that got
high schooler from Plano who had died while texting, and her family's done this big campaign, and her family had a home built on Extreme Makeover Home Edition and gave them several thousand dollars to start up a nationwide campaign on not texting and all that. So, I mean, this is very large in Texas.
Well, that's the reason why Senator Zaffirini, one of the sponsors of the bill, says that if something does happen, that the governor has blood on his hands.
Right.
Oof.
He made a strong distinction, though. He says that, you know, it is government intrusion, basically. It's government micromanaging adult behavior to enforce this rule. But he seems to think that there is a place for government to perhaps create some kind of law that would regulate teenagers and what they do while they're driving.
Well, I guess he also...
We already have, right? We have. You can't text while you're... You can't use a cell phone in a car when you're a teenager.
Well, I think he also
when
said that it was okay if... How would you make a long trip without...
Which explains all the noise in my backseat.
I mean, I think that he also made the distinction, didn't he? Please correct me when I'm always wrong. That it was okay for municipalities. I mean, here in Austin, we have a... Don't text and drive city ordinance. You can get a ticket for that. And I don't think he said that he saw that as a problem. But, you know, we were kind of talking about this just before we started recording. I think that this all goes back to the narrative that Governor Perry wants to have out there for the day that he finally decides that he's going to run for president. I mean, the narrative is government intrusion. We don't like it. I mean, that's why TSA is on, which we'll get to in a second, the TSA enhanced pat-down bill is on the call as well. This is, again, government intrusion as far as he's concerned. And
you are really jumping through the topic.
I'm sorry. I think that it's the narrative. There's government, more freedom.
There's two pieces to that. I mean, one of them, you know, this texting while driving thing is kind of a libertarian position. You know, Ron Paul had this moment in the presidential debates a couple of times ago, not this most recent one, where somebody said, is it true that you said that people should not be able, or that government shouldn't have, you know, some of the anti-drug laws. And Paul looked at him for a minute and said, how many people in the audience don't take heroin just because it's against the law? That's like a classic libertarian position. Yeah. And, you know, I think this texting while driving thing is a classic libertarian position. And you're right, it's no government intrusion. The distinction I would make is that the other part of this is not so much about government intrusion as it is about state supremacy, federal supremacy, you know, the fed up thing, the whole federal government shouldn't mess in state stuff. This is for the states to do. He's saying the state shouldn't do this. Maybe municipalities should do it.
I have a question about another veto. Before he came out with this, you know, a slew of vetoes last Friday, he had vetoed one bill from the regular session, and that was repealing this law that would have allowed the state to collect $600 million in online and sales taxes from online retailers like Amazon.com. We know that during the special session, lawmakers have tried to bring up that same issue. It's attached to a fiscal bill right now as an amendment. The governor warned them not to put it in there. Lawmakers did it anyway. Is there any indication you you think, what might happen, whether he would veto that?
Well, the indication is that he vetoed it before. He doesn't like it. He might decide that, you know, if it's in a package of things that he does want or that the state does need, that he just has to hold his nose and take it. You know, and, you know, maybe he'll let that become law without his signature.
Well, and there's still time to possibly put together a deal with Amazon.
Right, and they still got a week to argue about it. You know, the bill could be separate from the Amazon issue. I mean, there's two things moving here. One of them is, you know, the state wants to bring online retailers into the sales tax. And the way this works is, you know, if you buy something, technically you, the purchaser, owe the sales tax, and retailers in Texas agree to collect and remit those sales taxes to the state. So if you buy a book from Amazon, you actually owe the tax, right? But Amazon doesn't collect it, and some of the other online retailers don't collect it, and they say that we don't have any physical stores in Texas, and so we're not required to collect that, and that's the subject of a legal fine. This would close some of those loopholes. This legislation would close some of those loopholes. The deal with Amazon is a separate thing, where Amazon's saying we want to open a facility in Texas and employ 3,000 to 5,000 people, and the negotiation apparently includes the governor's office and Amazon are pushing for a 5-year or a 4.5-year hiatus from sales taxes. If you do that for the first 4.5 years, you won't owe sales taxes. What's interesting in that is that, you know, if you're Amazon and you're saying we don't owe sales taxes now and we want to open this facility, and if we open the facility, we're acknowledging we would owe sales taxes, but we're not going to pay them for the first 4 or 5 years, then at the end of 5 years, does the issue settle? You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff in the air here.
We're getting back to texting while driving for a little bit. One thing I was just wondering is that a freedom that the pro-freedom people are clamoring for?
Aren't we all pro-freedom, Reeve?
Well, you know what I mean. Yeah, I mean, this is going to get into the...
Reeve's not really.
This is going to get into the groping issue also, but, I mean, obviously nobody wants to be groped if they don't have to be, but are there people out there saying, like, we want the right to text and drive? It seems like, you know, why don't you just roll back anything that prevents you from doing it? Why don't you have the freedom to drink and drive? Both undeniably affect your driving in a negative way and put others at risk.
Right.
And it's one of these feel-good bills. I mean, you've got a family with a dead child pushing the bill. You've got the former Speaker of the House carrying the bill. It just seems like an odd...
Is it a legitimate concern to those lawmakers who say you can't even enforce this? You know, what if people just look down at their phones while they're driving? They're not texting, but you know, constitutes
that? Well, the city that was of part of the problem with you're not supposed to look down, right?
Yeah, put down the phone.
I'm not saying that I do that.
No, that was one of the problems with the debate during the bill, right? Is that you couldn't text, but you could do other things, which there's no point in doing a bill then.
Well, I mean, there's the issue here is distracted driving and whether you know how you're going to handle that and what you're going to do about it. And are you going to stop drivers for looking down at their cell phone, or are you more likely, if you're a cop, to stop a driver because he or she is weaving for whatever reason? Because they're,
and then you're allowed, you can look at their cell phone and see if
right, you know, been you know, pull them over and say, "What the heck are you doing? Are you drunk? Or are you texting? Or are you, you know, playing with the radio or what?" You know, I mean, if anybody who's been on a freeway in Texas during rush hour knows that people do all kinds of stuff. You know, I've seen people reading newspapers while they're driving, which is, you know, kind of an interesting idea. Putting on makeup.
But good for them for buying newspapers.
You know, in the realm of things, texting is just one of the things that can go wrong here. There's a liability issue here, too. If you have a wreck and they can show that you were texting when you had the wreck, does that make you more responsible for the wreck?
That's what the insurance companies would argue.
Does this law, you know, does this law or this veto affect that? I don't know. But
maybe some of these lawmakers, some have just been personally touched by it, either losing somebody or hearing from family members, and others perhaps have not had that exposure.
Right.
The any veto is sort of interesting because it just reveals something about the philosophy that the governor is creating for himself.
And sometimes these things take a while. You know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, that was a long road. I mean, it was a case built anecdotally by parents of, you know, largely by parents of children who had or relatives of people who had been killed by drunk drivers. It took a long time to get those laws through. You know, we had not very long ago, you could sit in the driver's seat and drink a beer while you were driving.
That was like Texas. 2001?
Yeah, it wasn't long ago.
99, something like that was when they finally changed that.
So, You know, I think this is an issue, you know, regardless of the veto, I think this is one that comes back and comes back and comes back, and it will come back with anecdotes and with stories of, you know, this wreck or that wreck.
You guys know this is my first session, so I'm just wondering, 25 vetoes out of thousands of bills that they've considered, is that pretty standard, normal?
It's actually low for Perry. Usually he's closer to 100, isn't he?
Well, he's not, you know, not 100, but, you know, he's okay. It's not an unusual
His record
number.
Is... in the low 80s.
Yeah, it's not a
which
it's
is
not
the record.
It's not an unusual number. What is, you know, vetoes are always interesting for two reasons. It's like, you know, there's the veto that is the I said I was going to do this and I'm vetoing it. And the legislature made its point, the governor made his point. There's the veto that is surprise, which I think probably the texting while driving thing fits into that category. And then there are vetoes that come up, you know, and there were some of these in there, you know, there are vetoes where you look at a thing and you say, I like this bill. The legislature looks at it and says, we like this bill. And something in the bill has a glitch in it. And there's no time left. And so the only way to get around the glitch is to veto it. And there were a couple of those. When he gets the budget, we'll get really the... you know, the next most important round of vetoes, because he can do line items and we'll see what in the budget he likes and doesn't like.
Well, and that, I mean, there was one veto that I've been looking at was I think one of the surprise ones that people didn't realize he was going to veto, but it was this higher ed bill that made it a little bit easier to not exceed the semester credit hour cap, which if there's a certain point at which if you cross over that number of semester credit hours, you have to start paying out-of-state tuition. Huh. And it said that if you are a community college student, only your credit hours that count towards the degree you decided to pursue would count towards that cap. And so if you took a couple years to explore around, that wouldn't hurt you. And he vetoed that, saying that, you know, this is going to encourage students to waste taxpayer money and waste their own time. And it was a surprise because they had worked out a deal to get this bill through, and the even people that had initially opposed it, it was a Castro bill, and Fred Brown initially didn't like it, and they worked it out and had a deal and got it through. But it just happens to sort of perfectly fit into the times and the debate that's going on right now about whether or not higher ed should be, super efficient and streamlined, right, and personal responsibility and the responsibility of the colleges to get kids moving through faster.
Should they graduate in 4 years or should you let them have six?
Right. Right. So that bill just seemed to have landed, though they worked a deal out in the legislature, that landed at sort of a perfect time for the debate that Perry wants to have about higher ed. And right. So,
as the father of a high school student, you err on the side of the 6 years or 7 years to finish college, right? You're fine with that?
As a non-graduate of college, I really, you know, don't have moral standing here.
Ross is going to do several years of home college.
Right. 2 years, please.
Exactly.
Well, another thing that, in addition to vetoes, Perry also added groping to the special session call. That was one of the exciting...
Enhanced pat down.
Yeah, it was actually the line
like
for
that.
The...
You're not being groped. This is an enhanced pat-down. It's like Uncle Ernie and, you know, Tommy or something.
The way it was phrased...
use the word pat-down.
The way it was phrased in the call was very interesting, and I wish one of us had printed it out and put it on our extensive notes.
Regarding security
matters,
isn't it?
No, it's regarding to the, like, prosecution and punishment of official oppression on people seeking access to buildings or transportation, which translates to TSA agents grabbing you. As you try to board a plane.
Right. In a public building.
Right. Was it a surprise that he added this? I mean, it's a pretty late hour to be adding stuff to the call, isn't it?
It's late hour, but he knew that there was consensus on this, so it's really not going to take that much time. Most lawmakers are actually behind it. It's been an emotional issue. Well, I think that
not
yes.
enough to get it through the during the regular session.
The concept of the bill, though, there was general consensus on it. I mean,
it flew through the House. It stopped in the Senate, but, you know, I think Tana's right. I think it was, you know, a two-thirds rule thing, and the lieutenant governor was in the way. The lieutenant governor is no longer in the way, and you don't need two-thirds. I think it'll sail.
Well, and I think didn't realize sort of what sort of reaction it would spark in the outside
world.
They've
had rallies and the Alex Joneses of the world.
And so now,
once Alex was told which chamber had actually blocked it, he was ready to go over there and protest
yelling
it.
At the House that had already passed it. It's like, oh, yeah, okay.
How dare
here.
You block it? What? Okay, sorry. How dare you block it? I tell you.
That does not sound like Alex Jones, the conservative...
Sorry.
Conservative? The
very conservative.
I don't know if you went beyond conservative.
Quite, yeah.
quite radio host.
The difference Uber, is that I think this time Simpson, David Simpson, the representative who sponsored it, wrote. He says that the change is that TSA will have time to respond to this, so it's not going to be an immediate change. It's not going to take effect right away.
I just think this is. I mean, I would love to get on an airplane without having to stand in line for an hour just to have the privilege of taking my shoes and belt off and go through a line. I mean, anybody who has kids...
Do they make you do that?
Some places make you take your belt. Okay. I mean, you know, if you travel with kids, I mean, that's a lot of shoes, that's a lot of belts, right. And then there's jackets. And I mean, I would love to sail through on that. I would also love to not be blown up at 40,000 feet. I mean, so which do you want?
Right. Freedom versus security. There we are.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk to people who have lived in Israel for many years. I mean, the stuff that they go through on Israeli airplanes, it, you know, makes a little extra pat down on the butt look really minor.
But they're not talking about taking your shoes and belts off. They're talking about, I mean,
no, but I'm just saying they're groping. Saying, look, we don't want to be groped. Well, I don't want to be groped. I don't want to stand in line for 2 hours. Or
I think the rhetoric
long,
has just gone. It's gone.
But you're willing to be
it's
groped.
Gone beyond security. I mean, this is an anti-Fed issue. This is absolutely. About, oh, yeah. You know, the Feds right. are coming in and grabbing power. And that's
there's
what
that narrative
about.
We already
the thing
about.
Is, the TSA has already responded to this. I mean, they sent that letter saying that, you know, this puts you at a sort of an awkward position in terms of if we can let people on planes.
This was the U.S. attorney
Department
in the Southern
Justice.
District, San Antonio. So they basically said, you know, we might have to figure out what to do with Texas airports and what to do with, you know, interstate
flights
and,
right.
you know, we might have to cancel flights. And that was what stalled it in the regular session. You know, this thing will go to court if they pass it. It's just, you know, it's one of those things. And, it, you know, the state almost certainly has no right to do this. It's federal stuff. It's federal airports. It's federally regulated, you know, traffic, and the feds get to do this if they want to. And, you know, there hasn't been much of a call for no security at airports that I'm aware of. And so the question is, you know, what form should that security take? And that's really a federal decision and not a state decision.
It's interesting you mentioned the courts, too. I don't mean to change topics, but this isn't the only, you know, congressional redistricting came up, you know, during the special session.
Right.
They've sent that legislation to the governor, but everybody has said that this thing is probably going to end up being resolved by the, you know, a higher court or by the Department of Justice.
Well, so will legislative
not even redistricting.
All redistricting goes to court. I mean, it's just sort of a, you know, it's like the law of the universe.
And the abortion sonogram stuff is going to court. And,
probably so, right.
I mean, tons of stuff is going to go to court. That's one of the things, remember when Wayne Christian was doing his pansexual amendment, Sinfonia Thompson stood up and was like, you know, you can vote on this however you want, but this is just going to buy us another lawsuit.
Right.
I mean, how do they figure in the cost of lawsuits when they are doing this legislation?
No.
Well, Texas is able to get their lawsuits in bulk, so they get a discount.
That's a good line.
Well, thank you.
That is a good line. Yeah.
Let's move on then. Let's leave it at that.
I'm done.
So, I mean, I said that the groping bill was added at a late hour. How late is the hour? We have about a week left in this special session. What are the chances of coming back for another one?
Well, we have up to a week left. They could finish Friday and go home. I doubt it. But, you know,
Speaker Strauss just announced that they would not be doing that.
Yeah, they have to leave. They have to leave by the end of the day Wednesday, basically. You know, it depends on where you are in the process and what rules you're willing to suspend. You can do anything as long as the legislature's here if you have enough votes. And in a special session, you don't have the two-thirds rule. You probably have the numbers to do a lot of suspending. There's a couple of things that could hang this up. The TWIA legislation, the Texas Windstorm Insurance Association, the governor had said, this hung up at the end of the legislative session, and the governor said before the Wendy Davis filibuster that he was going to call lawmakers back for a special session on TWIA. He wanted to get the Windstorm, this insurance pool, reformed and revised before we had another full hurricane season. And he also said he wasn't going to call it back into the special session until they had a deal. He called it back into the special session, and bang, they don't have a deal. It's come to pieces. So there's a question whether they'll come back on that. There's a question of whether they settle that so late that it falls into filibuster range. You know, if you get something too close to the deadline and somebody's still opposed to it, then they can stall all your business and we can...
Is there anyone in the legislature willing to filibuster?
Well, I think there probably is. You know, the TWIA fight starts as an insurance problem. It's like, you know, this thing isn't taking in as much money as it's paying out. How do we fix that? And one of the problems that they think they have is that they're paying too much money to trial lawyers. And so that's where this fight is now. It's kind of a fight between, kind of become a proxy fight between Texas Trial Lawyers Association, Texans for Lawsuit Reform, and other tort reformers.
Which goes back to the fight between Steve Mostyn and Rick Perry during the
election. Right, yeah, it's got you know, undertow and overtones, right?
In its current form, isn't it also disadvantageous or whatever? You know, I mean, isn't it unfair or something to coastal homeowners?
Well, it depends on who you listen to. I mean, you know, the fight here is whether you can reopen, one of the fights here is whether you can reopen a claim that's already been settled. And you can if you can show that the claim wasn't settled fairly. And so there's still being claims filed on Hurricane Ike, for example, that have on things that have already been settled. They're saying, well, you didn't settle this right under these terms of the contract. You should have done this and this and this. And that goes to court, becomes a lawsuit. And that's one of the places where these costs have blown out. So two of the fights are whether and to what extent trial lawyers should be allowed to be involved in this. What should they be rewarded for successful cases? The other thing is, under what conditions should you be able to reopen a claim that's already been settled? And they need to resolve those questions one way or the other, just so you can predict future costs, just so you can set premiums. And in an indirect way, we all end up paying for this, because when they're short of money in TWIA, they assess all the property insurance companies in the state, whether we're on the coast or not.
And then they sell some bonds.
Right.
So right. Which the state, everyone in the state.
So, but it's an issue that, you know, with a week left to go, it's an issue that could blow up here. We've still got the TSA thing, you know, depending on how quickly they want to move on that. There's a lot of legislation. We had a story this morning on Wednesday, sort of an assessment inventory of where we are in the process. There's a lot of important legislation that's not quite finished yet. They have time if they have the intent.
Fiscal bills, health reform bills that are in conference committee, which means that they could be changed and it could upset one side or another, right? Right.
And you mentioned the Amazon issue earlier. If that stays on that is it Senate Bill 1 that's on?
Yeah.
And if Perry doesn't like that, don't they have to? Isn't that still a bill that they have to pass?
They have to pass that bill. Could he line item veto
that? No, has to be
not in that. Not in that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the question is whether he would take that bill without the Amazon thing in it, whether he would call another special session for Amazon, whether he wants to, you know, stand on a soapbox about that.
Another big deal is Donna Howard's Rainy Day Fund amendment. We don't know if that's going to stay on SB2.
You want to say what that does?
Well, basically, she has a provision in there that would allow any money, any surplus funding, any surplus funds that go into the Rainy Day Fund to go to fund enrollment growth in our schools. Because, as people out there may or may not know, the legislature has underfunded schools by $4 billion for the next 2 years. So they're saying that the Rainy Day Fund, this provision, could add another $2 billion. But conservative lawmakers have tried to block it. They've instructed the conference committee to strip it out of the legislation
after voting for them. Yeah, they initially voted for it, and
then they were reminded by someone that somebody
blew a dog whistle on it, and they came back the next day and said, oh, we didn't mean to do that, and it's gone through anyway. So now it's gone to conference. It's a split issue, though.
Some Republicans are supporting it. Some are not.
It puts them in the position where they have to go home and say, yes, we had the money, and no, we didn't spend it on schools. And if that's what your voters at home wanted, then you're safe. But if they're mad about the money that's not going into public schools, and they find out that you had some money that you could have used for that, that could be a tough spot, particularly for a suburban Republican.
Because it puts a number on it. I mean, the amendment very specifically says, well, I'm going to say specifically, then say I don't remember the number. It's either 6.4 or 6.5 in the rainy billion.
If the rainy day fund goes above what the controller says now will be available, the legislature can use up to $2 billion of that overage.
And so there's the hard number. You can say your lawmaker. Voted to make sure that the first $6.5 billion wasn't spent on education.
Well, and if in this budget cycle or in next summer's budget cycle at the local school level taxes go up and local school boards point back to the legislature, that's where this could come home.
Right.
And of course, hanging over all of this is what are Perry's presidential plans?
Oh wait, is he going to run for president?
Well, if he doesn't have to call a second special session. I think that's the calculation right now. Does he want to do a special session or does he want to run for president?
Because he keeps telling the national media, Texas media, that he's thinking about it and he wants to finish this session first.
Doing so much more
if you want to flirt and you want to tell everybody, I can't make that decision right now because the legislature's in session, what does another special session hurt? Gives you more time to hold off. So, you know, I really like to make a decision on this presidential thing, but I'm concentrating on Texas right now. And as you can see, we're having a second special session on TWIA or what groping or whatever it is.
Well, and of course, people have said that he really can't say that he's running for president until after his prayer event without risking politicizing his prayer event, which is in August. So you have time. There's still time for another 30-day special session if you wanted to.
The prayer event isn't politicized. Is that what we're saying?
Not yet.
Turning it into an official campaign event.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
got it.
Right. It's a non-political, non-campaign event right now. Or a non-campaign political – I don't know what it is. It's a prayer event.
But I think the special session has proven it doesn't matter whether we're in session or not. I mean, the speculation continues. I think this is a personal decision for Perry. It sounds like, you know, from all accounts that I've heard from people who are close to him, he doesn't know if he wants to do this.
So. Are we talking about the special session or running for president? What's the personal decision?
Running for president.
Oh, okay.
But he's definitely ramped up, or someone around him has ramped up the efforts. I mean,
well, let me take this apart. He's very carefully not doing anything that would prevent him from running for president.
That's right.
He's very carefully not doing anything that would dampen the talk about him running for president. You know, whether he's ultimately aimed at Veep, which, you know, I still kind of have in the back of my head, or whether he really wants to make the run for president, you know, I think is still in front of him. He's got kind of an opportunistic spot here. You can kind of, you know, there's a wave here. There's kind of a flirtation going on here. If people are really serious about it, you can continue on this track. If it looks, you know, in 6 weeks, if the varnish has come off of this thing a little bit and it's not as nice a prospect, if somebody who's already in the race has gotten afraid enough of Perry that they start throwing mud at him, he can always say, well, I'm not running for president, and back off. But right now, I mean, you know, this is in front of him. You can continue to dance with it. There's nothing forcing a decision. You know, and the fact that everybody like us is running around saying, have you decided? Have you decided? Have you decided? All that does is keep the balloon in the air. That all works for him.
And, you know, it really is a beautiful country, and this gives him the opportunity to travel all over it, which I think Tan has been watching.
I'm just selling books.
Really? I mean, even though he's been in special session, you know, we looked at his travel records or travel schedule over the last 4 or 5 months since he was reelected and since his book Fed Up came out, and he's already been traveling around the country. There is an element of, you know, it's all just kind of a coincidence, you know, that he has this book that came out and he's got to go on this national book tour and go to New York and Washington D.C. and all over California, and he coincides that with trying to pull businesses into Texas. And at the same time, he's also the chair of the Republican Governors Association, which requires him to go all over the country to stump for other candidates, to raise money. You can't help but think that that's got to benefit him personally somehow.
It's all just a coinkydink.
Yeah, really.
How different do you think, considering the stuff we've talked about over the last 27 minutes or so, how different do you think the veto list and the special session call would have been if he was not thinking about running for president?
I don't know if the veto list would have been very different, but the call seems to have at least a couple of things on there that...
What do you think those are? TSA?
TSA, maybe sanctuary cities.
Uh-huh.
Just because. I mean, you know, I know that he was... Obviously, he had been talking about sanctuary cities back during the campaign and everything.
Right?
But I could have seen him just calling in Physical Matters and TWIA and, you know, trying to get out while the getting's good.
Well, the legislative session doesn't seem to... The special session doesn't seem to have a negative effect on him. I mean, it's not one of those issues where people are, you know, outside the Capitol with pitchforks or anything like that. And the standard conventional
I bet some Democrats were hoping that people would be outside the Capitol.
Well, I think they were hoping that teachers would show up, schools are out, you know, that educators would show up and, you know, have protests in 106-degree weather and... But they haven't. And so I don't know that the governor's particularly suffering for this, and he can keep those issues up in the air. And the legislative session, like I said, gives him an excuse to say, you know, I'm not really thinking about the presidential thing right now. I'm watching the Texas legislature. But all of that said, to loop back to what you started with, they can finish in a week if they want to. They have, you know, they have plenty of time to do the things that are currently on the table.
Well, on that note, let's turn it over for another comment from someone who made the personal decision to leave the Capitol.
This is Chancellor Brian McCall again, reminding you that questions or comments about the TribCast can be emailed to podcasts@texastribune.org.
Thanks again, Chancellor McCall. who Tan used to be a state representative. I don't know if you knew that.
Okay.
This is your first session.
Yeah.
He ran for speaker one time.
Oh, okay.
On behalf of Chancellor McCall, Ross Ramsey, Tan Tan, Ben Philpott, and Todd Wiseman, our producer, this is Reeve Hamilton. Thanks for listening.
Look, pizza in a cup.